In this episode, I speak to Miriam Adler, the founder of La Luna and a relationship coach. And I must say, as me and her, we took this journey together, and over a few months, we've been coaching each other. And in that experience, I felt like this work around inner child was deeply, deeply powerful and transforming, and she was able to hold space so much that I could find pieces of myself and reconnect with certain pieces of myself by feeling into that little girl that always lived in me. I felt Miriam's power around inner child integration, and this is why I want to share her work and her thoughts and her wisdom around the inner child work here on this podcast. Keep listening if you want to learn how patterns like codependency, emotional withdrawal, or fear of abandonment often come from moments in early childhood, and why you might unconsciously attract partners who don't commit or give just enough to keep you hoping, but do not truly give you the love you truly deserve. Why you might struggle with self-worth, and how to heal yourself by reconnecting to your little child that lives within. And you will also learn why intellectual insight alone into this work won't really deeply change these patterns, and how to actually connect your body into this process and experience profound healing. You are listening to the Feminine Power Podcast, your portal into embodiment, feminine awakening, and the true power of your life force, sexual energy. I'm your host, Maria Grinina, founder of Feel, a global platform for feminine embodiment, and a coach for women ready to live with magnetism, love, and full aliveness. If you're ready to rise, you're in the right place. Follow the show and let's begin. Yeah, and I've had a beautiful experience exchanging coaching with you for quite a few months. And I've had deep highlights. I have deep highlights for myself about my own inner child. And those highlights that I found and those stories that I found by working with you are shaping my life now. There's so much empowerment in the stories that I uncovered about a little me inside of myself. And I've built so much more compassion for myself and gained so much more clarity. And therefore, now I'm making better decisions around my life, around my love life, around my relationships. And I would love more people to learn more about what does it mean to heal their inner child, to build a new relationship with them, to reparent them, and exchange stories and revelations that we've had in our journey together to show people some examples. And before we dive in, I would love to share your story with our audience. Tell me, who is Miriam Adler, and what does she do, and what brought her here?
Oh, big question. Well, who's Miriam Adler? I think there was a moment in my path that was very, when I think back, what really brought me on this path and what brought me sitting here today was actually an incredible feeling of lostness of who I am. So when you ask me the question of who is Miriam Adler, it always brings me back of this deep soul searching that I felt since I ever could remember, like in my teens, in my early 20s, like in these formative years where I felt so disconnected of who I actually was. And rather than connecting to who I am and my authenticity, I was very much trying to please my parents' view of me or their expectations of me. And actually, some of these expectations they had of me was actually illusionary expectations that I put on myself. So I grew up with this very quiet perfectionist voice inside of me of constantly wanting to do better. And I remember one time, I think many times, walking home after school from having done tests, and I was really good in school. I was a very good student. And I would just dissect the tests that I did. Like, I'm like, okay, what did I do? I did bad. And here I could have done better. And this voice of dissecting myself and wanting to do better kept following me in everything I was doing. Then it was in my early 20s, it was directed at my body. I felt like, oh my God, I needed to perfect my body and look better. And somehow I got drawn into the world of modeling. So after I finished school, there was this moment where I was like, okay, I could go to Harvard, I could go to all these universities and study medicine, like the path that was given to me. But again, I was like so lost of who I am. But there was a voice inside of me that was like, you're not going to choose anything that doesn't feel like your truth. And I didn't really know back then what that was, right? But, and then I kind of, like I said, I got lost in the world of modeling, and it was a world where I deeply disconnected from my body. And I felt, oh my God, I lost my period for 6 years. I was like in this constant dieting and binge eating and just like very much like punishing myself. And there was this voice inside that kept knocking of like, oh my God, what are you doing with your life? What are you doing with your life? What are you doing with your life? And that kind of started to get louder and louder. And the beautiful thing about also intimate relationships is like I was in a relationship back then, and also that broke apart because obviously intimate relationships are such mirrors. So it felt like everything in my life kind of like crumbled. And in that crumbling, where I just couldn't hold the outer shell of perfection anymore, my path really started. And with that was a deep reconnection to actually all the moments in my life that I have held suppressed, my feelings. And as you know, we will talk about inner child, but when we suppress our feelings and when we hold ourselves so tightly, there is such a huge part of our psyche missing, right? Like the feminine part is totally silenced. So it took me, I think now it's been 10 years since that, and it took me actually, and it's still taking me time to really recover that feminine essence of mine and nurture that and live in an integrated woman self. And that is what makes me sit here today, because over the years of doing this and obviously seeing myself grow and step into more power, into more truth, into what I'm doing today, I also realized like the responsibility that I have now to actually support other women through that. Or responsibility is a big word, but actually the deep dharma or service that I could do, because I could just see many, many, many other women suffering from the same split of their feminine, right? So that's why I'm sitting here today.
Yeah. And tell me about what you offer now to the world. I'd love to hear and share more about your retreats that are so beautiful and on all these important subjects for mother relationship, for love, for feminine. Yeah.
So like I shared, that was more like my personal path. And then I think 5-6 years into studying my own healing journey, it kind of became, it became really clear that I wanted to offer that to the world, every gift that I received. And I founded La Luna, which now it is my baby, definitely. And it is a collective or a community and a series of life experiences, retreats, right, that help women, now also couples, mother and daughters, in the aspects of, first of all, learning to relate more truly, more authentically to ourselves, and then the relationship that we have with others, with lovers, with our parents, with family. Because I realized that in the end, why I'm doing this work is because I want my relationships to thrive, because my relationships are what makes my life. Like obviously the relationship to myself first, but then all the other relationships that are around me. So I wanted to focus my work on really changing the landscapes of relationships. And what I offer now, I mean, first of all, obviously I offer, like we've done together, I offer one-on-one coaching, and these are containers of 3 months where I take women, but also couples, and actually also men recently, through this journey of really reconnecting with the heart, with actually the truth of who they are, underneath all the insecurities and wounds, right? Because I realized like how many of us still live through our wounds, right? And we will discuss that, what that looks like when we live life through our wounds rather than through the open heart, through actually the vastness of who we really are. And then with La Luna, I offer retreats because I really strongly believe in the power of group work and in the power of being present in one space. Different retreats. One is for women around embodying their feminine. One is for singles and couples around the relationship between masculine and feminine and really learning to embody these energies within you so that then your relationships can actually thrive. And also a retreat that is directed to actually solving these relational patterns that we talked about today. And the other avenue that I've been going down is leading mother and daughter retreats around healing the mother wound.
Yeah, that's beautiful. They look truly amazing. And I love that you cover different styles of relationships. And so many patterns can come up in those journeys that then need integration. And I would love to talk about what those things that you've seen coming up for people in your work, whether be it coaching or be it retreats, around, yeah, what we want to talk about, the inner child.
I mean, what I see is that it's at the core of everything. And what I see is that so many of us, or if not all of us, have a little child inside that somehow we are not fully aware of, because a lot of these beliefs and certain insecurities are actually within the unconscious. Like, we are not aware that it's actually our inner child that is driving our lives. And what I see is that so often we end up in relationships, or we end up in even work-wise, or we end up in situations where we actually don't realize how much of that situation is called upon through a negative belief that has been implemented in childhood. So, for example, this week I was working with three clients, and it was really powerful because what I saw is they all had very different childhoods, but somehow similar beliefs started to form of like, I'm invisible, I'm not seen, or I'm not important, and these beliefs are obviously formed through certain impactful scenarios or certain impactful experiences that happened in our lives as children or as adolescents that we weren't able to fully process. So what happens is that I start to uncover triggers with people. For example, I'm going to just share the story of a client of mine because it's going to help visualize it more. So she experienced a trigger. And obviously triggers are gold, because triggers always show us where there is something unprocessed in our life. So when something triggers us, rather than projecting it outwards and thinking it's the other person that is doing something wrong, actually, if it triggers us, if it moves something in us more than something normally would, right? So we get really aggravated, or we kind of, our mind starts to race, or we experience a body sensation. Something really impacts us. We know that the essence or the core of that trigger happened way before. It allows us to surface an emotion that somehow has been trapped in our body and has been happening way before this scenario that is happening now. So trigger is always gold. And so my client, she was very triggered by her mother taking over her life. Like, her mother watches her children a lot, and she felt like her mother was kind of like taking over her role, right? So she felt pushed to the side. So we went to the core emotion of that trigger, and she was like, oh yeah, I feel pushed to the side with my mother. And then in that process, through breathing, like, it always works, like, I always invite the client to bring an increased amount of breath through the body, because then the breath actually opens up old memories and we can actually access memories that we wouldn't usually access. So she traveled back in time to the first time ever she felt pushed to the side. And the first time ever she felt pushed to the side was a memory with her mother where she felt not seen, where she felt kind of disregarded, where she felt like her mother didn't, you know, where her mother didn't take care of her the way she needed to be taken care of. So she was envisioning herself standing in the corner, feeling pushed to the side. And in that memory, we then got to the core of what happened when she felt pushed to the side. She then started to react with shutting down, with becoming robotic, with trying to please. So, you know, she wouldn't no longer feel it. So she tried to be extra nice to her mother so she would be seen. And so she kind of disregarded and abandoned herself, right? And then when she was going through that memory and really feeling that and connecting to that child in that memory, and breathing, she was actually able to have the release of the emotions of that child, to actually feel her sadness and her pain and also her anger that she felt in that moment, but never allowed herself to feel. So that emotion was still stuck in her body, right? And then by her releasing that and actually calling upon her grown-up self now, that is able to hold that emotion, that is no longer a child that is the victim of it, but actually is able to hold it securely. She was able to find safety in herself and in that memory. And then I asked her what she would tell the child as that grown-up self now. And she was like, "You have space. You deserve to take up space." So that's what she told the child. And as soon as the child heard that, even more tears came and her whole body posture changed. Rather than being contracted and making herself invisible and living through that, her whole body started to open and take up space. And then I asked her to take that taking up space into her future or into her present moment self. And then she was able to actually see how she would react to triggers now differently, rather than making herself small again or pleasing again or collapsing again. Now she started to realize when that feeling, that trigger comes online and that negative belief of like, I don't have space or I'm pushed to the side. Now she can say, "You deserve to take up space," to herself, and actually change the imprint somatically, take a breath, ground her feet. And in that moment, rather than, yeah, like I said, avoiding or collapsing or pleasing, she can actually move towards the person and act and respond differently than she had all her life, right? And that is how we change our lives, because we no longer are living through our wounds, but we're actually living through we are living through our grown-up selves rather than our children now. And we actually get to lead life from a very, empowered stance, rather than a stance of being the victim of our negative beliefs and then with therefore also attracting, obviously, everything. You know, I will attract situations. If my belief was, I'm pushed to the side, I will obviously constantly attract situations that I'm pushed to the side. So now she doesn't need to longer attract that. I mean,
I feel like we can share a couple more experiences, because these examples are literally some of the best ways of learning and understanding what can happen when an inner child gets integrated. I'll share my experience of integrating a moment from the past that I now use in my relationship that truly helped me to connect deeper rather than acting from insecurities. And indeed, I feel like the most powerful part of healing inner child is to learn to not act from insecurities and fears that our inner child has learned long time ago when she was small and vulnerable, when she couldn't protect herself. Now, knowing that as an adult, I make my decisions, I'm a strong person, and I am the one who guides myself in life, I can stand up and empower myself and act from a different place of power. But if I don't heal my inner child, unconsciously and subconsciously, I act from still from those insecurities as if I don't have the power I actually truly have now. And that's what makes a difference when you heal your inner child and when you don't. So my example would be from our coaching sessions, where I figured through this body exploration that in my relationships with men, in my love relationships with men and my romantic relationships, I've always had this pattern which made me detach from them. Even though it would be a safe relationship, a committed relationship, there would be moments when I detach and somehow just go into my own safe space, avoiding intimacy. And those moments were about when my man would want to just do something fun for themselves without me, or receive an exciting invitation, or basically do something without necessarily involving me, which with my conscious mind, I find pretty toxic. I would want my man to feel free and enjoy himself, and there is abundance of everything that we can do together. I consciously would understand that. And I want to be an empowered woman and a confident woman. But something in me would always tell me, oh, look at that. He's going to do that now without you. Maybe he's going to have so much fun there that you will no longer be even needed. Like, there's this toxic voice, and that would make me detach. And I would go and find something else to do for myself instead of just sitting with the feelings and taking them as a part of our exciting life together. I would need to go and take something else for myself so that I feel like I'm secure. I can always be good without him. And exploring this pattern, which is quite a light pattern, wasn't like a big trauma or anything, apparently led me to a big trauma. That I found through this exploration that it was when I was about 1.5 years old, when I've had this amazing relationship with a boob of my mother that was always mine and was always given to me. And I had such a privilege of having it all to myself. And then my sister was born, and suddenly this boob is no longer for me. Suddenly someone else is with it, and I no longer have this access. And that made me feel like if something good is given to someone else, I will be left out and I'll be left behind and I have luck. And I really need to fulfill this need elsewhere. And back then, when I was 1.5 years, my grandmother has given me an alternative, her boob. She would put me on her stomach, and of course I didn't suck her boob, but I would like play with it. I would still feel safe. So I kind of told my mom in my mind, you know what, you don't give me the boob, I'm going to find it elsewhere. And since then, growing up in all my intimate relationships, if I wouldn't get 100% of something, I would detach and tell them, you know what, I'm going to get it elsewhere. And I'd prove myself that I could get it elsewhere, which of course would not create deeper intimacy that I truly desire. I don't want to detach from my loved ones every time they just want to have fun or want to do something good. And by meeting myself back then when I was this little child and learned that pattern, I could create clarity and I could reparent my little girl, and I'd go into that breath work it led me through, and I would meet her and be like, it's okay, there is enough for everyone. You are fine. You don't need to run anywhere and take anything from anyone. You're fine. There is abundance. You can always be fed, and you can just walk through life with confidence that you can have anything you want, and you don't need to take it from someone, and you don't need to run away if you don't get it immediately. And now in my relationships, with my relationship with my man, I am feeling much more empowered. He can have fun. I can have fun. We all can have fun. There is abundance of boobs, which I tell to myself, it's ridiculous, but I can tell to myself there is enough of that food that can be provided at any moment. That's okay. So it can feel abstract, but for me, in that moment, it really made sense, and I could recoup this little piece of myself that was struggling. And having said that, so my little trauma was not that significant or painful, right? No, my mother did not really abandon me. But for me, when I'm a year and a half, that meant, oh my God, my entire world, my entire food supply is now taken away and given to someone else. And by reparenting myself when I'm an adult and I consciously understand these things, I can empower myself. And that's what I wish for people, to start paying attention to these little things that actually can be so big.
I love what you're saying. I mean, I remember that moment really well. And I think the beautiful thing is, like you're saying, it's like we don't need to experience huge traumas to create patterns in our life that are actually unconsciously hurting us, which is like this pattern of lack, right? That so many of us have, right? I mean, I've been healing that as well. And it's like, whoa, like when we speak about patterns in your life, I think what is important for people that listening is like, what am I repeating in my life that is hurting me? What am I repeating in my life that feels like, that actually feels like, what am I repeating in my life that is hurting me?
Daily practice is what truly transforms inspiration into embodiment. It is how this path moves from something you know to something you truly live. This is why we created Feel, a platform where you can access daily embodiment sessions, tantric meditations, and feminine energy and sexual energy activations to nourish your journey day by day. Join the Feel membership to start your practice and sign up for our newsletter to stay close to our offerings, our courses, events, and so much more. You'll find all the links in the episode description.
And we all repeat things in our life that is hurting us. We all have these like spiraling, whether it's in relationship or in job or in certain circumstances, that when we actually become aware and we're like, whoa, like it's not the man. It started way before that, because I've been repeating the same pattern with any man that I've been dating, right? And that is then a beautiful invitation to then dig deeper. And I think, like you're saying, one thing is cognitively understanding it and going back to the memory like we did and feeling that. But the other thing that I think is so missing from therapy these days, or from psychotherapy these days, is actually the somatic and implementing the somatic and the primal system into that. So implement or inducing that experience with actually allowing you to feel, because it wasn't just important that you understood your pattern and what happened in the past. It was actually important for you, through breath work and through even light movements, to travel back to that memory, find yourself, and then somatically feel what safety feels like in your body through breath. And through obviously visualization and through holding yourself and talking to yourself. So your nervous system actually was able to release the anxiety that it felt when it was a child and the pain. And it was replaced with actual safety. And it was like, wow, my love, you're totally safe. And rather than having that cognitively understood, to have it being felt in the body, and then being able to go back to that memory each time now another trigger would show up, and being again reminding yourself of that somatic feeling of safety. That's, I think, how we change patterns. So it's important to bring the body into that process. Yeah. So thank you for sharing. It was so beautiful.
it's such a powerful thing to do, because then in integration in everyday life, I can just remember that place and talk to my inner child in the moment. Like, look, It's not like that. We have everything now. It's not that moment. And you've actually always had everything. It was okay to share.
Yeah, exactly. And you were describing your shadow so beautifully, because what happens is we feel the pain of lack. It's like, where's the boo, right? You feel the pain of lack. And what happens then is you start to protect yourself, which that is your shadow. And your shadow in that case was like, I'm going to do it all myself. I'm independent. I don't need you. I'm going to replace you. I'm going to take from somebody else, right? Like that is your shadow. And even visualizing your shadow, who's like kind of like a, you know, it always helps to have kind of a visualization of that. And by you understanding that that is your reactivity, and by actually really knowing that when that shadow comes back online, this kind of impulse with your partner of like, he's doing something beautiful. And then you're like, you know, I'm gonna now replace you with something else, right? Because I don't want to be vulnerable. Now you're like, whoa, this is my shadow response. And actually the only thing that can ever steal from me is my own shadow. Because my own shadow is actually what's now gonna take my experience of abundance away from me, because the shadow is like, there's not enough, so I'm gonna just take everything from somebody else. So the shadow destroys actually our life and the abundance and the fullness of what is here. So when we develop that relationship with our shadow, obviously we can smile it and we're like, my love, here you are again, right? But then we can also develop boundaries with that shadow voice, which is so massively important to not let that take over. Take over our experience.
Yeah.
I find in this work, in inner child integration, creating new boundaries and creating this talk with them, creating an ability to speak with your inner child and describe to them the boundaries and parent them as good parents would, to be so important. And this ability can definitely be developed and built. And it's so exciting. Sometimes when I explain it to people who haven't done this work, they're like, are you crazy? Because you have to speak to so many parts of you. You basically speak with yourself all the time. But in reality, it is a powerful skill and a new ability you can create that makes you so empowered. Perhaps you can share a little more about this boundaries and this free parenting.
So like I shared, the boundary and reparenting is a process that I have to become aware when that voice inside of me is speaking, when the voice of my wound is speaking, or when the voice of my limiting belief is speaking, or when the voice of that shadow part of me is speaking that wants to tell me like, you're not loved, or look, I knew it, like he's preferring other women over there, right? Like we have, when we start to become conscious of that voice, it's very repetitive. It's very like, it kind of always tells us the same story over and over again. So then the boundary with that voice looks like that in the moment that I catch it, I'm actually gonna just say with a lot of love, right, my love, like, I don't no longer need you, because I actually feel safe. Because what happens is that this voice actually wants to protect us, right? This voice it learned to make us feel safe through acting in a certain way. So now the boundary looks like, okay, I'm interrupting that and I'm actually tuning into safety in my body, taking a breath and like slowing down. And then I even have a visualization for that voice. For me, it's a bird that is like, and I'm in that vision, I'm just like soothing it and I'm giving it a bit of like seeds to eat, and I'm like, okay. And then I'm like, thank you so much. And then I'm gonna actually replace that with my grown-up woman self voice, with the voice of trust, right? I'm just tuning in and I'm like, okay, what is really true now? And with that, what is really true now, I get to challenge the belief system. I get to challenge the truth of these thoughts. And I'm like, okay, like, is that really true? Right? Is that really true? No, I already know it's not true. And I think it's quite quick. Like once you've done it once and twice and three times, you're kind of like, oof, it's just like a separation from that voice. And the reparenting of that looks like, at least for me, I mean, maybe I say a personal example for that, actually. What a pattern of mine was, and what I had to reparent, was the feeling of something in love was lacking. Like I would experience with any man that I would date, this feeling of somehow, after a while, of somehow not feeling like the priority or not feeling important enough, or there was that feeling of lack of like feeling unloved, right? And I realized over the years, I'm like, it's for sure not dependent on the man, because I've experienced the same feeling over and over again, right? So what I had to go back to was the memory of myself. Also, my sister was born when I was 4 or 5, and feeling that she took over my life. She took over my mother. She took all the attention away from me. So I started to believe that I'm not important. So now, actually, this little girl that believed that she's not important started to actually direct my adult relationships. And when I felt that, which was really important for me, was an actual, and with that started to form an anxious attachment pattern. Like I would be like reaching out, and like I would get extremely anxious and full of panic when I wouldn't get what I actually wanted, and I would feel very unsafe. And I actually needed to go through a detachment process with my partner, where I had to face my fear of actually losing him and not being his biggest priority. And in that, really facing my deepest fear in that moment of loss, I was able to reparent that, because the pain was becoming so loud. And rather than to react to the pain by soothing it through him or soothing it through a message, I had to learn to soothe it myself. And that is reparenting, because in these moments that this fear would get so loud, or this like panic would get so loud, I would be like, okay, Miriam. And I would almost see myself like, as a grown-up looking at my little child, it was almost like I was witnessing this little part of me, this very fragile part of me, in total angst. And I would like breathe into her and hold her, and I would tell her like, you're safe now, like you're like, I got you, you know. And in this I got you, she was able to really release all the tears and all the pain. And it wasn't necessarily memories attached to them. It was just my nervous system was just releasing the sensations of like, oh, like, yeah, having been left out and yeah, not being held the way that I needed to be held. And in that, when I started to realize that I'm no longer the unsafe child, that I no longer need to, but now I'm actually able to hold the emotion of loneliness that was underneath. And I was able to hold the emotion of sadness that was underneath. Did no longer control my life. So I think a really big part of reparenting is learning that we can hold our emotions, that we are no longer slaves of, or that we are no longer children that need to be soothed by somebody else, but that actually we are grown-ups that are able to breathe through our emotions, whether it's pain, grief, anger, right? Like, and that we can make that emotion feel safe enough to be fully processed rather than suppressed. And when we learn to hold these emotions as grown-ups, that's how we reparent our inner child, because rather than reacting to that emotion, now we move through it and then come back into a state of alignment and presence, and then act from that alignment and presence rather than from the reactivity of that emotion, if that makes sense.
Yeah, that definitely does. It's what's really beautiful to see here is your ability and ability of people who learn to do this inner child healing to soothe, right? It is as if you meet that little girl who lives inside and hug her and love her and give her what she actually wanted back then. And it's like the need suddenly gets satisfied. No longer she needs to cry and shout for it and claim it, because it's given. What do you feel like are the most common patterns people face that come out of this wounded inner child?
Yeah, that's a beautiful question. I think the most common patterns or the patterns that I see are either a collapse, which looks like pleasing, or not a learned way of not raising your voice, of doing anything possible that you're not losing love. And with that kind of, rather than standing in your authenticity and truth and strength, you basically abandon yourself, or you've learned to abandon yourself and make somebody else's truth your truth. And I see that in many women, and I see that in many men, actually. And in men, it's like this Mr. Nice Guy, right? That is like, has learned to please mama, because if he doesn't please mama, mama gets really angry and mama withholds love, or mama gets controlling. And so now he is like catering to mama and doing all the right things, trying to do all the right things, but he's actually abandoning himself in the process, and he's losing his own authority in life. And the sad part about a man that is in that pattern, right, is actually that he does anything to please his woman, but somehow his woman still doesn't feel it's enough, and she actually loses attraction to him, because she is like, she actually wants his authority, and she wants his truth, and she wants his strength, and he's doing anything, but you know, in this doing anything, he is actually losing what he wants the most, right? Which is his woman. And it's very sad to actually see this pattern.
It is so common. It's unbelievable. I remember myself in very early days of dating. Actually, first time I did this, I was about 15 years old, when I started testing men, how far I can push them. And if I can push them far, I'd break up. And I've done that so many times when I was like, especially when as a teenager and as in my early years, I wasn't so conscious about being kind and compassionate. I rather was playing. And I remember doing this on purpose, pushing a guy to check how hard can he bend. And the harder he'd bend, the less attracted I'd become. And it's so sad to see this, how many people would really bend for love, thinking that this is the right thing to do, and definitely comes from this really early wound. And then how sexy it is to see a man who can set a boundary. I'd be like, please do this and that. And I'd be like, no, you need to pace it out. And I'd be like, yes, okay, now I want to stay in this relationship. It's unbelievable.
Yeah. Yeah, because it's like, I think it's obviously it's a power dynamic, and we always will test, are you powerful enough to hold me, right? And if I'm able to just push the guy over, right, like with my little fingertip, and he bends down to me, obviously then I'm in this, like, I lose respect for somebody that doesn't respect himself, right? And that's really important to know. And the healing for a man in this pattern, like you're saying, happens if he learns to go back to that, like these traumatic memories where he felt that his voice didn't matter, where he felt that his mother would like explode in anger at him, and he felt scared and frightened. And now he needs to bring his voice into these memories and bring his power into these memories, and not fear anymore losing the feminine, but actually standing up for him, because that's where it comes from. He was afraid to lose mama, then now he's afraid to lose his woman. And I think when a man really faces his fear of losing somebody and realizes that, okay, even if I lose you, my life is potent and beautiful and abundant, and yes, you are the flower in my life, but my life is gonna continue to thrive. And with that knowing of that, he then doesn't operate from fear of loss, which when you operate from fear of loss, your relationships, it's like you're actually operating from a disempowered state, right? And that is always going to be felt on the other side. I think this is an important pattern. And I think another, obviously, we also see this, both of us. I mean, we both do women's work, right? We both see this a lot in women the same way. And so many women learn to abandon themselves. And that looks by dating somebody that, you know, doesn't respect them, or trying like to look for breadcrumbs. And that is then the self-abandonment, or the self-abandonment and actually being the nice girl and smiling all the time and like, ha, 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 when they actually mean to say no. And when they mean to say like, hey, this is not okay for me. Because also us women, we've been taught, right, to behave, to be nice, to be sweet, to not be too much. And then that surfaces, with that collapsed adult self of behaving, of actually, and then we don't even know anymore what is our truth, right? Because we're so accustomed to make anybody else's truth more important than ours. And then that shows in and then that kind of transforms into codependency. And we end up in codependent relationships where we make somebody else's need more important than ours. So
let's touch on this, actually, because this thing of especially women who are dating and then are settling for this low commitment for breadcrumbs is so common. It's one of the major issues that women go into this work for, actually. So where does it come from, this breadcrumb okayness?
Oof, this breadcrumb okayness, because obviously at the core of it, it's low self-worth, right? So I'm going to need to take anything. Anything is better than nothing. And because we believe that actually somewhere inside, there is a belief that either we are not worthy for love, or we don't deserve it. And, or we don't deserve love. And with that is like, okay, if I operate from like, I'm not worthy for love, if somebody even gives me a tiny little breadcrumb, I'm like, okay, like I'm going to take that, because if I'm not taking that, maybe then I'm not going to receive anything else, because like, I'm not really believing myself to be worthy for more than a breadcrumb, right? And I think at the core of that is, again, like a girl that has learned somehow to abandon her own self and like wait for somebody else to save her. Because as soon as a woman learns to retrieve these parts where she's abandoned herself and waits for somebody else to save her or protect her or make her feel safe, or right, always this external grasping, when she takes that back into herself and actually learns to make herself feel safe, and the more she makes herself feel safe, the less she abandons herself, her truth, the more she speaks up, the more her nervous system will operate from this place of safety. And then actually a man that will give breadcrumbs breadcrumbs won't actually be attracted to her. She won't be attracted to him anymore, because she's like, that doesn't match the safety that I feel inside. So I'm like, I'm not taking these breadcrumbs, thank you very much. So that is, I think, how we heal that pattern.
Yeah, I totally agree. It's basically to stop taking back breadcrumbs, one needs to heal the self-worth in them. And to heal the self-worth in them, part of it is to go back into times and places where you've learned that you don't deserve, and that you've learned that just a tiny bit of something is enough.
Yes. And you know, it is so beautiful. I mean, we studied this together, but we always speak a lot about the inner mother, right? Like the mothering of ourselves and the nourishment. And obviously the mother is the form, she teaches us to receive nourishment. So when we actually create a new inner role of an inner mother, we re-teach ourselves what it feels like to receive nourishment. So it opens our ability to receive, and it heals our ability to receive when we are implementing that kind of mother archetype in ourselves. But what I found really important, especially in the realm of relationships and dating, and is actually the figure of the inner father. And I always call him the witness. And for me, the witness, when I understood that actually the masculine is the witnessing presence in me, is the one that observes, the one that watches out, the one that protects me, the one that is awareness himself. And the feminine in me is my heart, my feelings, my ability to experience life fully. When I then understood that actually I need to, my inner witness is the presence that makes me feel safe. So the more I watch myself with these eyes of kindness, or the more I get to like say to myself, like, my love, I see you, I see how hard you work, like you're doing, you know, yeah, you got this, like you're doing, the more I speak to myself and I witness my own experience like that, the more safe I feel to open and feel, and the more I will be matched by another presence that resembles this witness that I carry inside of me. Because what I've realized in my own personal life, I'm like, my own inner witness is quite sharp. It's like hard masculine. It's like, come on, you can do better. You step straighter. Like, come on, like, get your shit together. What are you doing? You know? And all of a sudden, I started to see the resemblance of that in my partner. And he was really strict with me and like, come on. And I somehow weirdly loved his strictness. I'm like, oh yeah, give me more, tell me off more, like, but I'm like, why, you know, I was missing the warmth and the kind of like understanding from him. But then I realized, I'm like, I'm not giving that to my own self, so I need to upgrade my own inner witness first, my own inner masculine first, so that he actually can match that. And this, in my own inner masculine, teaches him how to hold me, right? So yeah, that was a big shift of mine. And I practice that now all day long. Like, I'm like constantly, I'm like looking down at myself and I'm like, ah, and then my family. Yeah, it's a beautiful practice.
Yeah, that's it. At the core of what we are really sharing is that if people want to live a good life, the answers are within. And sometimes it's hard to understand, what does it mean? Okay, what do you mean everything I want is within? But that's exactly about what you're now sharing. If you want a different relationship, then you're checking in inside what kind of relationship you have with yourself. And often, if digging deep enough, we see that it's exactly matching the kind of relationships we have on the outside. So by changing what's inside, we can change what's on the outside. And your example just showed that.
Yeah, I love always like that saying, like it really stuck with me, like the only common denominator in all the relationships that we have is ourselves. So if I know this, I know that actually it's never about really the other person. It's always about me. And that is greatly empowering, because I get to know that if I upgrade, if I resolve these patterns, if I actually really have the courage to look at myself and change these dynamics, I automatically will change the outer relationships that I have. And I think that's why we're doing this work, really, is because we want to live a good life. We want to live a love-filled life. We want to live our life with an open heart, because like, imagine not living your life with an open heart. It's like the saddest, yeah, like grayest experience that there is, right? Like living life from lack. So yeah, it's beautiful, and it never ends. It never ends.
There is no end to this road. And I must say that in this part of, and on this path of self-development, and on this path of getting into an amazing life where our relationships are thriving and we love ourselves and we have an amazing experiences, this integration of inner child and also reparenting, and then healing this relationship with inner masculine and inner feminine that you've touched upon, basically the foundations. Like, there is nothing without it. It's one of the most important things.
And like you're saying, that relationship with that, these childlike parts will stay with us forever. It's not like, oh, we healed our wounds, right? Like, yes, we heal, but like we make whole, but actually these certain imprints are staying with us probably all our lives. You know, it's just how we relate to them becomes differently. And it's not going to stop that one day I'm going to not needing to have to take care of that child anymore. And I'm not needing to self-soothe anymore. And I'm not needing to be like, come back, because that's the condition of being human, right? Like it's a constant reminder that we are not separate. And and I think if we don't practice this, we definitely somehow these sneaky beliefs and voices do sneak themselves back in, right? And one thing I think that's also beautiful to mention is, like, sometimes we get really tired, like, oh my god, like I've been doing this for 10 years and I'm just keep, you know, I keep experiencing like spirals and intensity and things. And I think it's really important to know that it's always gonna like move in a spiral healing. Like it never just is complete. But what changes is the actual density and intensity of what comes up. Or it might still be very intense what comes up in these explorations. But we are so accustomed to holding it, and there is such a deeper knowing of who we are, and our stability has changed, that actually nothing can blow us over just the same way. And we actually can move through grief and pain with way greater openness, because we're less scared of feeling. And I think when we are less scared of feeling, that is what changes all our lives. Because you have to think, like, why did we protect ourselves in the first place? Because we were scared to feel the fullness of our pain. We're scared to feel the fullness of our loneliness. We're scared to feel the fullness of the abandonment, to feel the fullness of the rejection or the sadness, right? And when we learn to feel the fullness of these emotions or things that happen to us, we lose the fear, our heart can remain being open, we no longer need to protect ourselves, and then we can live life through that openness, which is, I think, what we want to do.
Yes. This is a beautiful conclusion for our podcast. And I wonder if there is, what would you share with people who are just starting this path? How could they start their inner child healing journey?
It's a good question. Yeah, what I would share with people that just started this path is the importance of finding therapies that include your body. Like, whether it's breath work, whether it's somatic movement, whether it's dance, right? But to find therapies that will allow you to access these deeper buried emotions and move them through your body, and then allow you to process and hold them in a more integrated way. So I think what is really important is not to just make this a cognitive digging process of the past, of going through the childhood and speaking about the childhood, but it's actually not so important. It's not really about the stories, it's about the feelings that are behind the stories, and for you to find therapies that will allow you to feel rather than to think.
That's 100%. I couldn't agree more. I'm so happy you've mentioned that, because a lot of people can tend to intellectualize everything, and when listening to these kind of things like the podcast we've just recorded, it can be really difficult to approach what we are sharing just through the mind. Imagine like researching, okay, so what is inner child healing? When does it start? What is the proof? What's the statistics, which obviously probably does not exist? And like, how exactly does that work? And what is the exact step number one? It's not like that. It is such an intuitive and deep work, and the body is the one that leads this journey.
And to also find a facilitator or a therapist that resonates safety from their body, because you want to be held by a motherly love. Like, you want to be held when you go through these deep releases by somebody that can induce the space with that divine motherly love. And that is really the healing frequency. It's not necessarily logic or, but it's that power of a mother's love that can heal anything, right? Like it's really true. So we learn to embody that in ourselves. And if we are held by that in a container, it's immensely powerful. And obviously, I mean, you called your whole work feel, right? Which is beautiful. It's probably exactly that, right? Or what made you choose the word feel for your
platform?
It is exactly that, right? Because by feeling, this is where we are transforming. There is enough information these days with everything that's developing in technology and social media. And I mean, information is no longer an issue. We don't need to think more now. We need to feel more. And that's really the answer for our development. And sharing things like holding and experiencing, that's where retreats are really coming. Going into an experience where you can actually be held and witnessed and see how other people are. So powerful. Working one-on-one or doing practices, even just doing practices is just so, so powerful. And intellectualization is rather, yes, can be rather harmful.
Yes.
If it's approached that way purely.
And maybe we give them like one really simple practice actually that you can start to do every morning that has changed my experience. Like I'm gonna actually get up, and it's a shaking practice. You soften your legs, and with that soften of your legs, the kind of vibration starts to come through all of your body. And by moving vibration through all of our body, our nervous system gets to, through breath, sound, and that shaking, start to release any places where we are holding tension and contraction. And when we start to loosen these places where we're holding tension and contraction, and we are able to bring energy there, usually in these places of tension and contraction, there lives these old memories, right? Or these old emotions that we weren't able to process. And by giving them breath and movement and sound, we're able to move them through the body. So often in the morning, I wake up and I do this. I breathe in and out of the mouth. And especially when I'm moving through like tender moments where I am triggered or I am tensed or I am, then I'm like really allowing this emotion to flow through me. And then I usually experience an emotional release that allows me to come back to myself and hold myself, right? And it's a beautiful, potent practice.
Yeah. Oh, I mean, I love this practice. It's so important. I hope more people start their day this way, or do this after work, or do this before something important to release all this tension that's there. That's pretty normal to collect these days.
Thank you, Maria. I'm so grateful, and I loved our 3 months together. I mean, you were sharing what you worked on, but I mean, me, I was working on my blood drinking whore, which the archetype that I really wanted to bring forward, because I've been we're talking about conditioning. So my was like my pretty nice girl that wants to like also please, and I was able to bring forward that blood drinking whore that doesn't give a damn and she takes what she wants. And so yeah, this work can become really juicy, and I'm really grateful for the months we shared together.
I love guiding you towards your blood drinking whore. Yeah, like owning it and making it juicy and sexy is just so good. Such a path to power. Such a path to power.
That was Miriam Adler on the Feminine Power Podcast. If you'd like to learn more about Miriam's offerings and her retreats, please check this episode description. And I have a great news. Miriam will be teaching inner child healing inside the next cohort of our signature course, Feminine Power Blueprint, coming up this autumn. And if you are interested, you're invited to join the waitlist. You can find the link in the episode description. And if you enjoyed this episode, please leave us a rating. If you are listening here on Spotify, head to the 3 dots next to the podcast name and you are going to be invited to rate this show. It is also available on all podcast platforms. This matters so much to us and allows us to grow this podcast and our mission to help women to embody their true power.
I'm Maria Granina. I'm your host of the Feminine Power Podcast and Feminine Magnetism Coach. And if you want to connect with me, check the episode description.